All right, last day of June today. We're getting closer to the restart of Major League Baseball season, a 60-game Major League Baseball season. Joining us right now, 14 years in the big leagues, friend of the show, Adam Kennedy, joining us on the Sprint People's Hotline. Adam, good morning. How are you?
What's up, guys? How's it going?
What's happening, man?
Is baseball, morning, sir.
Is baseball just teasing us? Because are they going to start? Are they not going to start? Are they going to stop on us once they start? Where are we at with this?
I mean, if I'm an owner, right, waking up every morning praying, you know, Mike Trout, Walker Buehler, these guys don't test positive, you know, otherwise your short season is over. You know, I think there's like a clause in the contract where, if, you know, the integrity of the competition starts to dwindle, then they're going to bang it. Well, at what point is that? You know, because all these guys getting tests, what, 100 tests every day for each team, how many of those are going to be positive? You know, you're going to get some, so. At what point do you bang it? So it's frustrating because we're all excited, but who knows if they're going to pull the plug.
You know, it's interesting. In the NBA and even some players in the NFL have expressed whether or not now is a good time to go back to sports because of the social justice movement that's happening across the country right now. As far as I can tell, Ian Desmond of the Colorado Rockies is the first baseball player to have that sort of sentiment. Do you think he's alone in that, or do you feel that there are other baseball players in particular who also are wondering if now is a good time to have sports back?
Yeah, I played with Desi, and he's a great teammate. He's a great guy, one of my close friends. And he always had, you know, it's all based on how you were raised and your experiences growing up. And he had those experiences, and they stuck with him. And you could always tell he kind of had a chip on his shoulder, and he used it in a positive way, you know, to get to where he's at now and to make a great career. He has a great family. So I would imagine so, if that's the environment you grew up in and those are the experiences you had, because I can't relate to them, but I know Desi has, and I'm sure plenty of other athletes and baseball players in particular have. So of course it's an issue. And, you know, I stand by Desi, and I would stand by any player that chooses to take, you know, take this time and spend it with their family and do things in the community that are going to help them and their community moving forward, for sure.
Adam Kennedy joining us here on The Morning Show. And Adam, you know, one of the things that baseball players have to be good at is the whole don't get too high, don't get too low thing. It's 6 months, it's 162 games, and 0-4 is right around the corner, the same way 3-4 is. Can you change your approach going into a 60-game season? Can all of a sudden, can you have like an end-of-a-season push when you haven't had any ramp-up to it in the first place? How difficult would that be?
Yeah, I think so. It's going to be fun as a fan, right? I mean, we're gonna watch more intently each night, I'm sure, you know. And I would think as a player that's one thing that will be easy to change is just the importance of each game. What are they saying? Almost each game is almost three games, three the win or loss. So, yeah, as a fan, it's going to be great. And I think as a player, that's probably one of the easier things to be able to turn a notch up. You know, that's always why it's fun to play in the playoffs, you know, because you just have that energy, that short-term energy that you can kind of ramp up a little bit. I always enjoyed that. I would imagine a player is going to feel a little bit of that as well.
When you look at where we are at the start of the baseball season, there's only 60 games to go. Teams like the Padres and the Giants, almost call them the 49ers, have legitimate shots in the Angels, legitimate shots at being near one of the only two teams based on the 60 games to finish in the end. Am I right about that?
100%. I mean, you can go year by year, right? I'll just, like the Rockies, for instance. Every year I feel like the Rockies are right there come, you know, August or maybe late July, and then they just – you know, the pitchers probably get a little tired from being in Colorado or whatever it may be, but the Rockies are a team I always think of that are kind of there, and you think, is this a year for them? And they just kind of falter off in the end, and the Dodgers kind of take that leap because they're just better. So, yes, of course, and that's going to be the beauty of it, right? We're going to have a World Series of, like, Baltimore versus Colorado, you know what I mean? So it's going to be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. I hope, you know, everything goes according to plan, and we get a season jumped off because for that reason, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Adam, do you think it's harder for a favorite to come through in this scenario from a mental aspect of it? Like, take the physical part of it, just from a mental aspect. Is it more difficult for the favorites to come through in a 60-game season like this?
Oh, I would say there's much more pressure. You know, I mean, look at the Dodgers are great. You just know they're the best team in baseball, right? So for them mentally, they probably know we're going to be around come August, and then we just got to make sure we handle our business, and we'll be there at the end. But now, you know, Walker Buehler gets banged up a little bit. Kershaw gets banged up. One of the big boys, you know, has to spend a week or two in the deal. Somebody gets sick. It can just change everything. So if I was the Dodgers, you know, you're probably a little bit more worried than these other teams because you just your window is so small, and you are the best team in baseball. Everybody knows it. Probably should have won a World Series in the last couple of years. So for a team like them, probably a little bit more precious.
Adam Kennedy joining us here on the morning show. Adam, LZ had his top 10 earlier this morning about the top 10 phenoms, guys that just had it figured out from a very early age. And one of the guys that was on his list was Ken Griffey Jr. Who are some of the guys? I mean, you spent 14 years in the major leagues. Who are some of the guys that you played with or against that just made Major League Baseball look really easy the way that Griffey made it look?
Yeah, Griffey was kind of one of the guys I went and watched him play in San Bernardino because, you know, I grew up in Riverside, so we would go watch him there, and he was kind of the guy, you know, hat backwards, just trying to be as smooth as him on the field. But then, you know, once you get in playing against these guys, Trout, obviously, you know, probably the top of that list. And there's not too many. But Albert was like that when I played with him in St. Louis. Just the hitting seems so easy when you're up there struggling. Just get a loop single, right? He's, you know, it just looks so easy to him. But I always appreciate players like that. I grew up a big Oakland A's fan. Well, not a huge Oakland A's fan, but watching Ricky Henderson, Dave Henderson, slap his glove on his knee, catching fly balls in the outfield. So that was kind of, those are the kind of guys trying to be smooth and make it look easy like that, that I grew up watching. And Trout's my favorite player because of that, just the ease he brings to the game. You know, Bryce Harper, great talent, but he just makes it look so hard, right? He like running hard, hair flying all over the place, helmet flying. So I appreciate Trout and what he brings to the table and just the ease he has. It's pretty envious.
Adam, first of all, I'm not here for your Bryce Harper hate. Second of all, if you were a manager of a squad and you had a young player, budding phenom, who was struggling a little bit, maybe a week or two, can't get a hit, do you bench that young guy like a Gavin Lux in exchange for someone who's younger because or more experienced because it's only 60 games, or do you try to ride it through?
That's a great point, LZ. You know, in a regular season, you can kind of pull the reins on them and give them a few days off, early BP, you know, just a lot of talking to them and kind of working with them. But yeah, now the pressure's on, right? You don't have an extra week to just kind of waste or take a step back. It's a good question, but you really got to go with your best hand. You know, that's why Kiki's in the bar would be super valuable to that team because you know you can really – stick him in anywhere, you can count on him for good at bat, great defense. So for sure, if one of the young guys is struggling behind the plate or second baseman, if they bring him up, definitely probably be on a shorter leash than most years, for sure.
Adam, does the manager become more important in 60 games? Because, you know, Key brought this up earlier, the whole idea of the analytics that so many of these teams follow. Those numbers play out over the course of 162 games, and this is part of the reason the Dodgers struggle the way they have in the postseason, at least to a point, because the math in a short series is kind of meaningless. Do you throw the math away if you're Dave Roberts or Joe Maddon or one of these guys and go back more towards what your eyes are telling you, what your gut is telling you?
Yeah, I mean, I would think the Dodgers probably have that game plan, right, of what they're going to do. And if it goes accordingly, I'm sure they'll still stick to a little bit of analytics style. I'm sure they have a game plan with Kershaw on a pitch count, Buehler in his innings, all these starters and how they're going to use the bullpen. But yeah, if you get off to a slow start, right, it's like kind of throw that stuff to the wind and let every game we just got to play our best players, play our hottest hand, you know, let our starters go a little bit longer. You know, Shohei, we need Shohei to go on, you know, 4 days rest instead of the five they're talking about having going, then you do it, right? I mean, it's a great chance. This year is a great chance to win a World Series for so many more teams. And I think to really run with that opportunity is what most teams will do.
How much does the DH play in the manager's thought process moving forward?
Oh, it's huge. I mean, team like the Dodgers with so much depth. Those guys are all those hitters. This is the best thing for them. You know, getting that extra bat in the lineup. Most NL teams don't have that extra DH type guy on the bench. The Dodgers do. They're definitely benefits them. It's fun to play an NL style game, right? As a bench player, as I got older, I enjoyed playing in that NL style. You always have to stay ready. But as an American League player, having that DH, just getting that extra bat in the lineup, it was always interesting and tougher on those pitchers. So the pitchers are going to have a little bit tougher time this year adjusting to that.
Adam, very quickly, do you think we're going to see a good team, whether it's I'm talking Dodgers, Yankees, one of those teams that we really expect. Minnesota is supposed to be a really good team this year. Are we going to see at least one of those teams miss the playoffs in a 60-game season?
100%. Something's going to happen to one of those top teams, you know, just off to a bad start, one bad week, you know, one of their star players not kind of getting hot yet. Something's going to happen where it just doesn't work out for them, and it'll be frustrating. But like I said, for me as a fan watching games every night, I'm really looking forward to it.
Adam Kennedy, 14 years in the major leagues, friend of the program. Adam, always good to talk to you. Thanks a bunch.
Yep, thank you, sir. Thanks. Thank
you. You got it. I mean, you think of it, guaranteed there's going to be a bad team that gets in. Guaranteed there's going to be a good team that gets left out. And I was really surprised, guys, that he said, you know, the easy thing to do is change your mentality. I would have thought that would have gone the other way. That's what I've been talking about for a while, this idea of, okay, just I got to approach this differently, snap your fingers and go at it. That's encouraging for me as a Dodger fan to think that those guys can do it like that.
Hey, you know, go ahead, LZ.
I was just going to say, you know, I thought it was easier, Travis. I think we and I disagreed on that on the onset. Mm-hmm. Not that I'm a baseball player, but just in life, if you know that you don't have a lot of time to do something, you know, it's a lot easier for someone whose entire life is built on not being a procrastinator to transfer that over to another area of not procrastinating. And not that looking at baseball 160 games and saying that's procrastinator, but if you know you just got to get it done, you don't get to be a major league anything if you don't have that gear just to get it done when you need to have it done. Otherwise, you won't make it. So I assumed that they'll be able to make that transition easier just based upon the fact that they got there in the first place.
All right. What would you do to save your job? Maybe give up something. Not everybody would do it. That's next on the morning show on 710 ESPN. You guys fans of the Portuguese soccer league?
I am.
Hey, Porto.
Show me some pictures.
Well, if you are, you're going to have to do it without player Mirko Antonucci, because he was released from his team after they asked him to stop making TikTok videos, and he said, nah, I'm going to keep doing it. They asked him to stop.
Wait, what?
Portuguese club Vitória, they did not like the amount of time he was spending online, and they warned him there would be consequences if he didn't get off social media. But he said, nah, I'm just going to do it. After they lost a game last weekend, he put another video of him dancing on TikTok, and they released him. So he chose TikTok over being employed as a professional soccer player.
Man, I guess. Maybe he wasn't making any money. Right?
Well, he's making less now.
Right, no, not necessarily, because the TikTok, TikTok people.
No, he wasn't getting paid for TikTok, bro. He was just on there dancing.
That's not what I'm saying, Coach. I'm saying maybe he could take his TikTok game to the next level, because you know that social media TikTok stuff, them people making crazy money.
He wasn't that good of a dancer.
Oh, okay.
So or a soccer player.
So, I was going to say, he must not be much of a soccer player either. I'm about to say, cut him over his TikTok habit.
Yeah, maybe he saw the writing on the wall anyway and just was like, I'm out.
But I need to understand what kind of franchise sets that as an ultimatum anyway. Like, why do you care that he's dancing in his own time on TikTok?
Mm-hmm.
That's a fair point.
Like, what the hell is that all about?
And the dancing, it wasn't like anything gratuitous. It wasn't bad or anything. It was just risky. Dancing like cute little. You know, he just doing little hip hop dances and stuff, and it's just playing some music in the hotel room. So the ones I saw, it wasn't anything like it was, you know, like, oh, that's vulgar or anything. So yeah.
Maybe it's just the fact that he's on a platform that's mostly 11-year-old kids that they decided that maybe we don't need that guy in our life anymore.
Man, I had the funniest experience yesterday. It was pretty funny to me at the end of the day. You know, so my mask that I have, you know, the mask that I bought with you, LZ, reads Black Lives Matter on the front. So I had to run into Wells Fargo to get some paperwork yesterday. And my guy was at lunch, but he left it on his desk. So as I get into his desk, it's all the way at the back of the bank. So, it, you know, as you go toward the back of the bank, you're going probably toward, I don't know, maybe like the vault area or something, and is in that direction. So when I hit the bank, you know, I hit it. I'm in there, non-threatening, my flip-flops on, my board shorts and T-shirt. So I don't look like I'm doing nothing. I mean, that's how you should look when you're going to rob a bank. But then at the end of the day, I roll up in there. So I'm going to his desk, and I'm thinking to myself, is this a good idea to go to the desk, or should I proceed to the counter and tell the people that he told me to go to his desk and grab them papers off of it? So I walk over toward his desk, and I stop for a minute. I think, yeah, this is probably not a good idea. Let me go and ask the clerk at the teller window and tell him, hey, Kevin told me to grab these papers off his desk. So as I get ready to do all that, I got a lady. She done beeline to me toward the back of the chair. Come out her little cubby hole moving. And she looking at me, and I already know. You know what I'm saying? I already know it. Why she looking at me? So I'm like, Kev told me to get this off the back of his desk right there, the envelope, my name. And so dude coming from behind the teller. Now Kevin's coming back from lunch, so he see them talking to me like, no, everything's okay. She done asked me for my ID. Kevin what? Walking through the door, and I'm like, there he is right there. So at the end of the day, when I get the paperwork from him, she looking at me, so I point to my mask, and I said, see, this is why. And I point to my mask. So when I walk out, you know, I give Black Lives Matter when I walk out. Kevin, he laughing. So he texts me. He goes, dude, they thought you was getting ready to do something to my when you stopped by my desk. I'm like, and he was like,
what did they think you were gonna do?
The lady thought I was getting ready to rob the place.
Wait, off what? From the desk?
429 Roberts.
And she thought I was.
Don't you walk up to a teller if you're gonna do that? You don't go to a desk.
She thought it was a diversion, and somebody was getting ready to come, and we was getting ready to rob. I swear to God, man. God be my witness.
She thought you was about to steal a bunch of deposit slips. Man, that's the only thing they got at the desk.
What were you wearing? No, he texted me and told me. He was like, dude, seriously? I was like, he was just basically telling me. I was like, wow. You know, and he was like, man, don't even trip. I'm like, I'm not worried about it. He's like, good for you. I'm glad you said what you said. Because I said, you know me, I said some other stuff, too, that I can't say. Then I'll be looking like the bad guy. So.
But wait, what were you wearing again?
Man, I had on board shorts. You know how I look, how I dress.
You know, so crazy. Key, I'm so with you on this. I was in Amsterdam with Steve. And Steve is Dutch, 100% Dutch. And so we went to go to visit where his mom was born, which was maybe an hour outside of Amsterdam. Now, Amsterdam, I'm a tourist, right? I got on polka dot gym shoes, a camera with a lens that shoots out like, I don't know, 7 inches from the camera. Like, I'm dressed as about as goofy and as much as a tourist and non-threatening as you can possibly be. Do you know we get off that train in Sissenheim in the Netherlands? I walked maybe 4 or 5 blocks with Steve, and the cops showed up. The cops showed up. They were like, what are you guys doing here? And it was like, do you not see the polka dot shoes in the camera? Like, I'm about as non-threatening. And the cops actually said to me, and this is how global racism is anyway, but a cop has actually said to me there have been a rash of home burglaries, and we had gotten a phone call as people were concerned that you were walking around. And I was like, what did they think? That they do with the polka dot shoes and dreadlocks?
I was just going to say, is the suspect known to have worn polka dot shoes when he entered these homes?
And they said people. That means plural, multiple, not in person. People. You got multiple calls.
Man, it was so crazy. And they ended up, so we were like, oh, well, we're trying to get to the to City Hall because, you know, blah, 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 blah. And they gave us a ride to City Hall in the back of the police car.
Just to be sure, I guess,
just
right?
Just to be sure, yes.
So can't crazy. Rob nothing from back here.
And all of that, though, I felt bad for the lady, though, at the bank. I felt bad for her. I just felt bad for her, man. She obviously didn't know any better. That's just, you know how I am, LZ. I just felt bad for her. I'm like, she can't help it. That's all. That's all I say. I feel bad for her. She can't help herself.
You know, I not to make it too serious all of a sudden, but both you guys used this phrase to describe the situations you were in that never, ever crossed my mind as somebody who doesn't have to deal with what you two guys have to deal with. The idea of dressing non-threateningly. You know what I mean? Like, I wouldn't, short of me walking into a bank with a ski mask on, it's never occurred to me what I can't wear to go into a bank.
Before we move on back to sports, I don't dress like that for those reasons, Travis. I dress like that because I'm comfortable. But I also have seen when people who look like that, how that comma, like my man was talking about yesterday, that we talked about, how that's treated differently. I also understand that. I also understand dressing a certain way. Yeah, okay, you can go down the street, but if you look a certain way, it becomes suspicious and certain. But I don't do
that's
it intentionally.
The point.
That's just who I am.
If you know, you're wearing flip-flops and board shorts and a T-shirt, Key, that's more or less the same thing that I'm wearing every day. But it's not because
non-threatening. But they also
it's because that's what I want to wear. That's what I'm going to the bank in. It's what I'm going to the grocery store. And I don't have to worry about somebody seeing me with, you know, a hoodie, for instance,
look, Trav,
and going, oh, what's Travis up to? He's got a hoodie on.
But it's look, Travis, they also know the likelihood of me getting on the damn surfboard probably ain't going to happen, so they got to check
it out. Well, that's probably true. That is probably true.
He's trying to fool us. We know he ain't no surfer.
Right. Cam Newton is in New England, and at least one person says that he is grossly underpaid. We'll talk about it next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. You got a long weekend coming up. How good is that going to feel? 4th of July weekend. Maybe you're heading to the beach. Maybe you're going to head up to the mountains or the desert. You're going to take a drive up the coast. Whatever it is, you're probably going to have to be in that car, right? Why not make sure that it's running at its absolute best and get yourself into the Valvoline Instant Oil Change, home of the 15-minute drive-through oil change, and still exactly the same. No appointment necessary. You just drive up, drive in, and drive out all in 15 minutes, whether it's a tire rotation, transmission care, oil change, whatever you got. You don't have to get out of your car. You sit right there in the car. You can look at your phone. You can listen to some music. You don't have to touch anything. Touchless pay with Apple and Google Pay. They'll email you a receipt. You're down the road on your way to 4th of July weekend knowing that your car is running at its absolute best. You know how important it is to make sure that you're getting there safe and sound and in a good mood, that you're not that guy broken down on the side of the road. 15-minute drive-through oil change at Valvoline Instant Oil Change. Go to SoCal Oil Change for coupons and to find one of those 80 locations across Southern California at the Valvoline Instant Oil Change. All right, guys, so we know that Cam Newton is in New England. He's there on a deal, a very heavily incentive-laden deal. He can maximize the deal and make about $7.5 million. It's about $1 million in base salary. Richard Sherman says that it is, quote, disgusting. He tweeted the following. How many former league MVPs had to sign for the minimum, asking for a friend? Just ridiculous. A transcendent talent and less talented quarterbacks are getting $15, $16 million a year. Disgusting. Is he right, Key? Is Cam Newton getting played with the amount of money they're paying him?
Well, look, I would like to see him obviously get more money, but given the situation and when he was released from the Carolina Panthers, limited the pool of opportunities, which limited the financial reward that he could get for playing the position at an all-time high. I mean, to be a starting quarterback of one of 32 teams in the National Football League certainly warrants you to be paid more than $1 million and $7 million total money with incentives that are likely to be earned. I think when you look at it, based on Carolina releasing him at the time, didn't do him any favors. And I also understand Carolina's position in trying not to get rid of him immediately until they secure their quarterback of the future in Teddy Bridgewater. They held on to him a little too late, and then the injuries, the pandemic, all of those sort of things came and went, except the pandemic is still here, but the injuries have come and gone for him, but people couldn't touch him, see him, and there wasn't very many positions that was open up at the quarterback spot available for him in the first place. Tom Brady went to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There wasn't a lot of spots open for Tom Brady either. We all assumed, oh, the Chargers, oh, this. But it really was only one team for Tom Brady and his team, the New England Patriots. That was it. Either you could go come here, stay here, or go to one other team. So when you look at the quarterback room in the NFL as a whole, where could you plug Cam in that he can win?
But Tom Brady did get his money, Key, and it happened like that. The second Tom Brady was free, he got paid, and it happened.
And if Cam Newton didn't get injured, he'd still be in Carolina for the $20 million. But on top of the injury and on top of the $20-plus million and a new head coach, the new head coach comes in. He wants to do his own deal, which is understandable. But at the same time, he needs to evaluate who Cam was, and it took a period of time.
What Richard Sherman's getting at, though. He's making accusations that this was done intentionally.
But Coach, there's no money. And Richard needs to understand, which he's a smart, but you know, smart guy, Stanford grad, you know, top of the class, that there was no money available at this time. Now, you could always say, well, if they wanted to pay him, they could go restructure, they could do all of these sort of things. But at the end of the day, the opportunity to go to New England and play for $7 million, but to reshape your image as a player so you can hit big on the free agent market next year or re-sign with New England is a win-win for Cam. There's no question about it. Richard Sherman is right. If there was the money available and this happened, if we were talking about Jameis Winston that was free at a time when free agency was still available, where Cam Newton was free, but the injury part of it. He was on the market at the same time as Jameis Winston, but Jameis is not injured or coming off an injury. He's coming off a brain injury by throwing all those interceptions, but that's about it. I mean, you know, so when you look at it, Richard Sherman brings up a great point, but I wish Richard would have elaborated on why Cam Newton is taking this type of money. It has nothing to do with they're paying a black quarterback less than they're paying a white quarterback. It has more to do with the timing of it, because Teddy Bridgewater got his money because he was a free agent at the right time, and he happens to be a black quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I wasn't really jiving with what he was saying to your point, Key, because you can't overlook the timing of everything and what you've talked about, you know, the past few weeks, but particularly yesterday, this idea that, you know, we're at the very, 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 very end of free agency. Nobody's going to get paid because no franchise has money left to pay you like that. But I do wonder if people are taking this opportunity to also diss him a little bit, starting with his own franchise dissing him in a variety of ways. And while I won't go all the way and say they held on to him as an attempt to try to screw him over in free agency, I can't help but wonder, when you look at some of the little things added up together, if there wasn't a concerted effort just to mess with him a little bit. Kind of like the way, if you will, that, you know, the conversations about, you know, Todd Gurley and his money with the Rams, and you begin to wonder if something else was instigating that, and it wasn't simply about a business decision, but that something personal was attached to it. I kind of feel the same way about Cam and the Carolina Panthers.
Well, couldn't there be this, too, that there's just a value at some point that you have to do it? Because let's talk about just the cold, hard facts of this, that Cam Newton missed the vast majority of last season with a foot injury, didn't play. The season before that, he did play most of the season, but he did not play particularly well because he had a shoulder injury. You look at some numbers that they just put up on TV here, that Cam Newton has been hit more than any other quarterback in the league, over 1,300 times. The next closest guy is Russell Wilson, who is about 300 fewer times. Then the next guy on the list is Aaron Rodgers, who is nearly 600 times fewer hits than he's accepted from Cam Newton. That it wasn't just money, it wasn't just timing, it wasn't just this, that it was, you know what, I don't know exactly what Cam Newton is anymore. He's been hurt twice, two different ways. He's been taking a ton of punishment because of the style in which he plays. And now we're at a point in the calendar where I really don't have to pay him. The Patriots, the risk of the Patriots is virtually zero. It's all upside for the Patriots, that they've got a former MVP who was not an MVP all that long ago, a guy that presumably is maybe healthy, but if he's not, we don't lose anything. We lose, you know, I got $1 million guy. That's, you know, in NFL terms, that's not a lot of money. There's no risk. This was a value play more than a clock play.
Well, I mean, your point about the hits are well taken. I think, you know, and listening to Key all these years, and every now and then he says something that makes sense. I think the fact that he talked about coaches being lazy may also have something to do with it, because Cam, as brilliant as he is when healthy and on top of his game, he's a very unique talent in terms of the quarterback positioning. And you actually have to scheme to take advantage of his talents. And maybe some teams also shied away from him because they were lazy and they just wanted something that was a known commodity that they could plug in and not have to re-scheme for.
The idea of my quarterback getting hit over 1,300 times is not an idea I love. And I get that he's what is Cam, 6'5", 250 some odd pounds, and he's built like, you know, a tank. I get it. But at some point, when you get hit a lot, it just doesn't come back the way that it used to. And you wonder if that's what it is as much as anything else. Just his inability to stay on the field, his inability to rebound and be the player he was, because coming off of the MVP season, and then you go back to 2018. And his shoulder was bothering him. And finally, the shoulder gets hurt. He comes back in 2019, and it's the foot that's bothering him. That it's just that we've talked about this with other guys.
2018, though, Travis, in all fairness to Cam, 2018, he was having one of his better seasons till his shoulder got injured. That is
factual. No, I get that. No, he was playing really well, but he did get hurt. And then he got hurt again in a different spot. And if I'm buying an asset, and this asset is starting to break down. If I'm buying
but
a car,
I wouldn't,
for instance,
I wouldn't deem it as starting to break down. I wouldn't
two different
say
injuries
it,
in two different seasons
yeah,
where he missed time.
I wouldn't say it that way, because breaking down, 1,300 hits that he's been hit since 2011, and he's still been pretty durable. Cam has not missed a whole hell of a lot of time up until this point last year. That's mm-hmm. the first time. I mean, when you break down the numbers. Really, that's the first time. Tom Brady
isn't that
missed
part of the problem,
Tom
Key,
Brady
that
missed
he has
it.
Played
Tom,
so much because
Tom
he's
Brady
got
missed
hit
an
so
entire
often?
Tom Brady missed an entire season with an ACL. An entire season with an ACL.
And, yes.
And then he came back and he hasn't gotten hurt since.
Yeah, but Cam came back and then immediately got hurt again, and Cam takes far more punishment than Tom Brady ever took.
No, but
far
the whole
more.
Point the whole point my whole point is guys are going to get injured. You cannot base your signing of a player based on whether or not he's going to have a season-ending injury. I mean, you can't do that, because if you do that, you're not going to sign anybody. So I think going to New England will show people he's healthy, and then we'll look to where he goes to next year if it's not New England, which I'm probably a betting man that it will be New England again.
You think it's a long-term play?
It's certainly a long-term play if they do well. Certainly a long-term play if they do well. And when I mean long-term, I'm talking about four-year type situation.
Sure, sure. All right, the Dodgers are getting
ready. No, we ain't going to do the Dodgers. We're going to update the polls when we come back.
Nah, let's not worry about that. The Dodgers have a 60-game season, and if you think that's a slam dunk, it's not, just as often as not. That's next on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN. Key, I can only assume that because you're anxious to do the update on the poll, that means that you
Raj.
Yes, Key.
Yes. Just want to make sure that we update the poll, the closing of the poll, more so than anything.
Yes. It's a final, Key. It's a final. You have won with a resounding 50% of the vote. Congratulations, woo! Keyshawn. Get his victory music queued up. LZ is second with 34%. And Travis has, I wouldn't say fallen to new lows. You've been worse than this. But you got 15%. your funeral pick fell dead on the voters.
Not for me, it didn't.
No, but just to wrap up, Key's winning votes are winning picks. So Memorial Day was his first pick he took. 4th of July, of course, coming up, which I thought would take a hit because everything is going to be closed, but it didn't. Christmas, everyone loves to turn up during Christmas, and of course, Labor Day. So he took all the holidays, and off the strength of the holidays, Keyshawn has tied up 7 apiece with LZ at the top of the standings. Congratulations.
Say no more. But Travis, nobody wants what? To drink at a funeral, man.
You couldn't be more wrong.
No, of course they do.
See, Keyshawn, you've been to broke people's funerals. That's why you didn't have money for the alcohol. Travis go to the alcohol. You go to the funerals where afterwards they got enough money to buy some wild turkey and stuff.
No, we're not. It has nothing, just that you're grief stricken, and then it turns into this moment we talk. Oh, I remember the time.
I understand that, but
you
understand
that.
But
you
it's
have
not
a celebration
fun.
Of life. A celebration of life.
I understand celebration of life and all those sort of things, but it's not a fun drink, man.
Sure it is. Speak for yourself. Look, like I said, I went into this one with a I had no delusions that I was going to win this thing, but I'm very comfortable with my picks. And when the next time I have to go, and hopefully it's not for a very, very long time, but this is one of the things that you just kind of sit around with your friends and talk about the person that's no longer there. It's nice to reflect and celebrate their life.
Travis, I'm going to have to start calling you the Cleveland Cavaliers. You know why?
Why?
Because you had the number one overall draft pick in this snake draft, and you still ended up in the lottery. You had the first pick. You had the first pick, man.
Oh, well. I don't know if you guys can tell, but I'm really not that all bothered by all of this.
See, that kind of attitude, Travis, is not going to help in the long run. You got to be remorseful you were.
I'm starting to reevaluate. Maybe I'm going to take this in a new direction. I'm going to go with the trust the process and not only be the Cavs, I'm going to be the 76ers. I'm just going to go and race to the bottom and start collecting picks and see what we can come up with. You never know. 60 games, guys. The Dodgers, through 60 games, through the seven times that they've won the division, seven times in a row. Four of those times they would have been in the playoffs, twice with division wins and twice with wild card bursts, but three times they would have been on the outside looking in. And that's the part that going into the season, we all agree, all three of us here agree that the Dodgers have the best team in the National League. They're the deepest team in the National League. They've got one of the best managers in the National League. They are more well-equipped to add a designated hitter into their roster than any other team in the National League. That means virtually nothing going into this because in 60 games, all bets are off. The Rockies through 60 games make the playoffs. The Giants through 60 games. The Padres, these teams that they're going to be playing, you have a bad 10-day, two-week stretch, bye, and even really good teams have bad two-week stretches.
And that's exactly what could happen because when you look at the situation with the shortened season, and you like you mentioned those teams, those bad teams are in the mix. They got a shot now because if you go to the 60-game mark during the season, they're usually right at the top of the leaderboard, right? They're right there in the mix, playing good. The good teams, the Dodgers, the Yankees, they kind of the cheating Astros are hovering along, but they know that they're going to push the gas pedal closer to All-Star break and beyond that to get into the month of October. Well, that's not the case right now. Right now, it's like we all even, we're as good as you, and you ain't never experienced this 60-game season, so we all on the even playing field right now. That is the problem that I have, and that's the scary part for teams like the Dodgers.
Yeah, I am worried about the Dodgers, you know, having a slow start if this was a regular situation. I just feel that everyone knowing what's at stake, this window in time, the news of the Astros. Remember, the Astros news is new, relatively speaking. This isn't old news. They haven't taken the field yet since being told they were cheated out of a World Series. So when I think about those things, in addition to the fresh blood that is Mookie Betts, I just find that combination of things, and I'm talking with Dave over the last few months since the disappointing end to last season, I just feel as if they're so locked and loaded, I wouldn't be surprised if he won 40-some games, man. I'm just going to keep it real with you. It's not out of the question considering we did the same thing last year after 60 games.
But you go back the year before that, though, LZ, and they were about 500 2 years ago. So I hear what you're saying, that last year they were comfortably inside the line, comfortably so. The year before that, they miss. And it's more or less the same team. Travis,
that was the hangover, though. Because remember, the year before that, they lost in a heartbreaking fashion in Game 7 at home. Mm-hmm. And so they came into the following season heartbroken with the hangover from that defeat that I spent money on, that Keyshawn spent money on, that ran Yu Darvish, out of town and had people wondering what the hell was going on. Remember,
shout out to you, Tommy.
That hangover was the issue. Not that they weren't a good team, but that they were still thinking about what happened to them during the postseason. All that's off the table now. Now there's nothing left but anger and motivation because they were cheated, and now they need to go out and validate their place in history.
The Padres last year through 60 games were 31-29. That probably doesn't get you in, but it's probably going down the stretch, and it's pretty close. And this is a whole other angle, too, to this thing. Keep in mind, you're not playing a typical schedule. You're only playing against teams in your division and teams that are geographically kind of sort of near you. So the Dodgers will play the Angels a bunch of times as well, just because they're trying to reduce travel and whatnot. But what that also means is that when you're playing a bunch of games in your division, if you have a bad week against the Padres and the Giants, if you have your 2-5 week against those teams, that also means that those teams had a really good week against you. These are games that count double. If you're the Dodgers and you're playing the Florida Marlins, Miami Marlins, right, and you go and you have a bad week, well, the Giants could be playing the Pirates and lose two, so you really don't lose any ground. And that's why they stack all these division games towards the end of the year, because they basically count for double. So if we're talking about division games counting double, and then you're already adding on the triple value because we're playing about a third of the games, you're talking about these games against teams in your division potentially counting like six times as much. And I know it's not an exact calculation like that, but a bad week against a couple of teams in your division could sink you. It could happen that fast. If you have a five-game losing streak against the Rockies and the Padres, and those two teams get hot at the exact same time, you're not falling five games behind. You're falling 10 games behind, because they're winning, you're losing, and they're just pulling away from you.
Did they expand the playoffs, though? Teams in
no.
the playoffs? Oh, they
no.
did. For some reason,
no, because
like
they couldn't
did.
Get that together. Okay. That was it. They were supposed to when they were supposed to negotiate a deal. But remember when the whole thing just broke down and they said, okay, forget it. Let's just go back and do what we're going to do. The only thing that changed is the DH and starting a runner at second. That's it.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I look, you know, the Dodgers. Okay. So there's two things with the Dodgers. They have somewhat hit their stride getting closer to the middle of the season, but they haven't been far behind in the beginning of the season. So with that being said, hopefully they don't fall too far behind at the start of the season and have to play major catch up, that they can still, you know, play that within the first 20 games, be either in first or second place, and then be able to hit their stride. But if they fall too far behind, it was 60 games, they're not going to catch them, whoever's in front of them.
It's going to be weird to figure it out, because basically what used to take 2 months is now going to take 3 weeks. That you've got three-week little windows. You got 3 weeks to start, 3 weeks in the middle, and 3 weeks at the end. That's basically what you're looking at for a major league season. It's going to be an absolute sprint. It'll be fun. I just don't know if you're going to get a result that any of us are all that thrilled with. Kevin Pelton, ESPN NBA insider, is going to join us next. That's coming up on The Morning Show on 710 ESPN.